Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and you're listening to Amazing FBA with the marvelous Michael Veazey.
Amazing FBA is geared to UK, European, US, and Australian-based Amazon sellers. The standard podcasts are for those who are just starting out, and also for those who are in business but need some tactical help with specific things. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-Commerce Leader, hosted by myself and Jason Miles, Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you own a thriving online business and want to be the best leader you can, it's got your name on it. Hello there, it's Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA. Welcome back to the show. Vince Lombardi said, "Quitters never win and winners never quit." I think that is quite wrong. Today, I want to talk about why Lombardi was so wrong and why quitting can be a powerful strategic action that underpins massive success. Yes, you heard right. Quitting can be one of the most powerful positive things we ever do in our lives and businesses. What? I hear you exclaim. Well, let me explain. E-commerce is exploding at the moment, and that means that many of us have crazy numbers posted all the time by power sellers in Amazon and e-commerce generally, and we're very aware of that. Those of us who are privileged to be member of groups and communities of serious sellers, meaning real communities, by the way, of people who know each other, not 1,000-person Facebook groups, we are seeing our colleagues' businesses exploding. I've had the lucky position in the 10K Collective Mastermind of observing over the last 3 years how several of the members' businesses have grown from $1 million run rate to triple that, and that's before Q4 even kicks in. And we've even witnessed one member smash through the 8-figure run rate ceiling and at a healthy profit, not just meaningless revenue. Now, these results are all very impressive, and the entrepreneurial energy, strategy, and street smarts behind that are equally impressive. But I think that behind the very clear perseverance and stamina and hard work this obviously takes to achieve such results, there are some experiments that were less certain, less impressive. An experiment is really a polite way of saying finding out what works, which ends up looking like an overnight spectacular success, takes a lot of trying things that didn't work. A danger in such situations is to take the wrong lessons from the very impressive activities of the entrepreneurs. Sometimes, of course, the entrepreneurs themselves are not aware of the reasons for their own success. Yes, perseverance, energy, and focus are obviously critical in any challenging activity. Business, sport, or performing arts spring to mind, of which I've experienced classical music and London theatre worlds in my past life, and more recently, business startups and growth companies, all take a huge amount of persevering through difficulty. No question. Also, money is important, particularly, of course, in business. But persevering with what? Using energy for what things? Focusing on which things and spending money on which areas? I know for a fact that one of the businesses that smashed the 8-figure mark recently that I've personally worked with would never have got there if they hadn't stopped persevering with a business model that business used to run that was pretty much broken. If they hadn't stopped putting energy into a failing way of doing things. If they hadn't, in other words, quit a lot of things. So that's why today I want to talk about quitting. It's a very unsexy topic. It's even seen as something a bit shameful. And it's even kind of heretical if you believe in the American dream as a kind of almost religion for entrepreneurs. And yet, I think it's a very important topic. I'm not talking about quitting in the face of difficulty, challenge, or pain. That's clearly not the road to success. What I'm talking about is a concept called strategic quitting, for which I thank Seth Godin, the wonderful Seth Godin. Quitting is a bit like the sort of photographic negative of succeeding, the opposite of succeeding. What it does is make mental space, focus, energy, and money available for other things. And I want to relate this idea of strategic quitting from Seth Godin's book, The Dip, to e-commerce. And I don't think we can really talk about that without another one of Seth Godin's favorite concepts, the idea of a sunk costs, which he's repeatedly discussed in his podcast, Akimbo, and his blog, amongst other things. And I think these two concepts of strategic quitting and sunk costs are so incredibly relevant to people selling on Amazon that I really want to get this message across. And I'm going to quote a lot from Seth Godin because I think he says things beautifully. He's an incredible writer. And I hope that's not taken by him. If he finds out about this as disrespectful, I would love to get him on the podcast at some point, and I hope to do so. But I want to relate some of this stuff to e-commerce because I think it will serve you, my beloved listener. So this podcast really comes in three parts. First of all, I want to talk about the work by Seth Godin around sunk costs, which I think is a simple but really difficult concept. Simple but difficult can go together, by the way. Simple to grasp, really difficult to implement, sunk costs. The second thing is Seth Godin's concept from the book The Dip of strategic quitting. And then the third area is what I'm going to try and tie these together into a few simple e-commerce examples that I hope you can relate to. First of all, Seth Godin, if you haven't come across his work before, I really think if nothing else, if this podcast introduces you to him or reminds you to go read his work in any form, read or listen to his work, then I've done you a huge favor. Seth Godin, an amazing business leader and a thought leader. The word thought leader is much abused. There are lots of people who call themselves thought leaders. In my experience, most people who call themselves thought leaders are in fact thought followers. They shout loudly about one concept that somebody else told them a while ago and which they haven't really thought about since. Honestly, I guess I had to classify myself as a thought follower as well. Now, I think that's okay. We have our place, but I'm trying to connect you to the work of a true thought leader. I would say Seth Godin has 100% earned the title of thought leader. So here's what I take from Seth Godin's blog post about sunk costs. I'm actually going to put an entire blog post in here. I hope that's not offensive in some intellectual property way. I'm fully ascribing this content to Seth Godin. So here's the blog post, and this is Seth Godin speaking. An anonymous friend sends you two tickets to Hamilton showing on Broadway on tomorrow night on your way to the show. Someone offers you $2,000 for the tickets. If you don't take the money and go to the show instead, how much has it cost you? Or consider the opposite. An anonymous friend sends you $2,000. You go for a walk in New York City and on your way you pass a theatre where Hamilton is playing. You offer somebody $2,000 for two tickets. If you end up buying the tickets, how much did they cost you? It's pretty clear that the answer in both situations is exactly the same. We make decisions about what to do and what not to do every single day. And we lie to ourselves all the time about costs. If your team has been working for a year on a new project and 2 weeks before your expensive launch, somebody else comes out with a competitive product that's better and cheaper, it means it will cost you millions of dollars to fight your way to decent market share. Should you launch? What if your team had only been working on it for 1 week? Past expenses have nothing to do with future economic decisions. Past profits have nothing to do with future decisions either. That's not easy to embrace, but it's true. So that's the great Seth Godin's words, and I really think this is incredibly strong stuff. It's easy enough to grasp intellectually, and if you think it through, you'll really begin to see the truth of it, although it takes a little bit of thinking because it is a bit counterintuitive. But to emotionally make your peace with that, it's incredibly important. And I've seen this play out a number of times with really successful Amazon sellers and some who have totally got nowhere and everyone in between. People often have a product that is not as good as they want that can come in different forms. One is, of course, the classic that you think a product will sell and it simply makes no sales. And that's very common at people with early stages and also those more advanced sellers with more experience as well. The difference is normally that people at the early stages just quit the entire business model of private labeling or Amazon based on one particular product line not working out. And that's obviously not necessarily the right kind of quitting. The opposite, though, is often the case that people will continue to sell a product because they put months and months of their life into it and been working really hard, and it kind of makes sales, but not what they expected, and very thin profit margins. And I see that a lot with six, even seven figure Amazon sellers who I would like to listen to this podcast, if nothing else, just to make them think again about the fact that strategic quitting is not just for abject failures. It is for those in-betweeny cases that are not actually really good. And we'll talk a bit more about that in the strategic quitting part of the show in a second. So let's talk about The Dip, which is Seth Godin's book about it, and strategic quitting. So what is the difference between quitting and just strategic quitting? I really would urge you, by the way, to buy the book. I've just ordered a physical copy again. I've just re-listened to my Audible version of the book, and such great stuff. It is really clear-minded, not overly conceptual, but yet the concepts are clear and practical. I cannot say enough about it. Just go read the book. So here's what Seth Godin says in The Dip right at the beginning. I feel like giving up almost every day. In fact, not all day, of course, but there are moments. My bet is that you have these moments too. Most of the time we deal with these obstacles by persevering. Sometimes we get discouraged and turn to inspirational writing like stuff from Vince Lombardi, like quitters never win and winners never quit. Bad advice. Winners quit all the time. They just quit the right stuff at the right time. Most people quit, they just don't quit successfully. So that's Seth Godin's words there from The Dip. As I say, his book and Audible book, fantastic thing to buy. So let's reflect on this genius insight. First of all, I think this is so on the money. There are times when people quit when it's way too early because they have no idea what the future potential of their business is. It's obviously true that you can quit based on the fact that you're getting impatient or it's hard work to do something. And that's not the kind of quitting I'm talking about. And I see that incredibly frequently with people who are, quote, starting up an Amazon business. The only problem is not that they're a startup. I'm nothing against startups. I salute the courage needed to really get a business from nothing to existence. The trouble is most people quit before they even make any revenue at all. So how can you even tell whether the market wants your product? And if you've launched one single product, how do you know whether you might have just iterated two or three times or launched two or three other products and they wouldn't have succeeded? It's hard to know because that's probably quitting way too early. So I'm not talking about that. But what's very, very interesting is this thing that winners quit all the time. They just quit the right stuff at the right time. What a great quote. I think this has absolutely been true in my experience of some of the best sellers I know who are, as I said, maybe they're getting into eight figures profitably now, but they quit a lot of stuff on the way to that point. Now, one of the things that Seth Godin talks about is the importance of being the best in the world. Let's explore what Seth means by these statements, the best and the world. He says, our culture celebrates superstars. We reward the product or the song or the organization or the employee that is number one. The rewards are heavily skewed, so much so that it's typical for a number one to get 10 times the benefit of number 10 and 100 times the benefit of number 100. It's always like this, almost always anyway. It's called Zipf's Law. Winners win big because the marketplace loves a winner. So that's what Seth Godin says in The Dip. So if we apply this to Amazon, it's not subtle. You can see this all the time. If you have 200 or 300 SKUs, like a couple of members of the mastermind, if they apply 80-20 analysis and one of them did it and came back with a graph, which was fantastic because it was so clear. I think about 10 out of the 300 SKUs they had on Amazon, SKUs being product lines, by the way, that were responsible for most of their sales. It was not subtle. And that's how it always works. What I'm talking about today, I suppose, would be to go back to a person in that position and say, okay, why are you still selling the others? And yes, there's a long tail, as Chris Anderson famously articulated back in 2007 with his book of the same name. Very good book as well. But what would happen if you took the money, time, and energy that you're using on things that hardly justify their existence in your catalog and tie up money and time and you put those into things that work really well and are winners in their category? What would happen then? Here's another quote from Seth Godin about this. Extraordinary benefits, says Seth Godin, accrue to the tiny minority of people who are able to push just a tiny bit longer than most. Extraordinary benefits also accrue to the tiny majority with the guts to quit early and refocus their efforts on something new. In both cases, continues Seth Godin, it's about being the best in the world, about getting through the hard stuff and coming out on the other side. And here's what Seth Godin says in summary. Quit the wrong stuff, stick with the right stuff, have the guts to do one or the other. Seth Godin continues, people don't have a lot of time and they don't want to take a lot of risks. With limited time or opportunity to experiment, we intentionally narrow our choices to those at the top. Everybody does. As a result, the rewards for being first are enormous. It's not a linear scale, it's a curve, and a steep one. Being at the top matters also because there's room at the top for only a few. Scarcity makes being at the top worth something. Anyone who's going to hire you or buy from you is going to wonder if you're the best choice. Best as in best for them right now, based on what they believe and what they know, and in the world as in the world they have access to. So that's the end of the Seth Godin quotes. So let's reflect together on that for a minute. First of all, the countercultural statement that you quitting can be really strategic, very interesting stuff and very true. But the main point he's making about the other side of that is if you don't quit because you can kind of be okay or average or mediocre or even quite good or even good rather than the best, what you're doing is you're missing out on potentially being the best at something else. Because of course, time and money and energy are limited things, especially in entrepreneurial companies where everything's growing rapidly, or at least some things are growing rapidly. So I really think that the other way to look at this is this. If you look at an Amazon average results page and you simply run the numbers using Jungle Scout, Viral Launch, Helium 10, whichever one of the analysis tools that you can use to see what the sales are, you very often find that there is a steep graph which has a majority of the market share going to one or two brands. Now, it's not always that extreme, and I don't advocate, by the way, entering a market with that kind of structure, but that's where you want to end up. And that's where some of the people that I know who have really killed it on Amazon have exactly ended up. They dominate the search results, and as a result, more importantly, they dominate the market share, in other words, the percentage of the market that they have. Now, this relates very strongly to the STAR principle by Richard Koch, which is also one of the most amazing business books out there. And I've talked about that enough. My mastermind members get sick of me talking about it, but I'm no apologies because that's also one of the most important books you can read. But I think that's the flip side of the same thing, which is to say, if it is incredibly valuable to be the best in the world for a particular type of person with a particular type of need in a particular kind of world, so in other words, on Amazon is not just online, and you know, it could be that if you have a local shop, you might be the best bakery in North London, for example, for bagels. Okay, well, that's in a certain kind of world of North London, the best thing in the world of bagels, right? But whichever way you cut it, I think it comes down to really quitting places where you are mediocre, because the future of a mediocre product is violently different from the future of a really excellent product that is, quote, the best in the world. Really, really, really different. And I think simplistic statements in Facebook all the time or other places like that really do push us in the direction of persevering no matter what and blaming ourselves or somehow judging ourselves if our products or services aren't that successful. Because the truth is most products and services aren't that successful, and that's okay. But if you quit the things that aren't that successful and really work hard to work towards the things where you can, at least even on paper, as it were, theoretically be super successful, the best in your customers' eyes in a particular narrow world, and the internet's all about that, then, you know, if you quit the crappy things and you make time for those things, you have at least some kind of shot at being seriously successful. So let's bring this back to e-commerce and specifically the Amazon context. I think there are four types of strategic quitting that are possible, and some of which are really powerful and others of them are appropriate at other points. So the four types I think are, number one, the business model that you're running, because I think there's some business models that are not appropriate for some people and never going to be a win for certain people or certain types of businesses. Number two is your business or brand as a whole. Number three is part of your business or specific product line or products. That's really something worth examining. And number four is relationships, which is probably the most emotional and possibly the most important part of strategic quitting. So let's go through these ones. First of all, the business model. There are many different business models in the world, and e-commerce, I suppose, is a form of business model, as an industry, I suppose. But the business models that exist within the Amazon world that I and most of my listeners would be familiar with, and you may be as well, would revolve around Amazon, such as retail arbitrage, online arbitrage, wholesale sourcing, So buying from existing brands in order to retail them on Amazon, private labeling or custom manufacturing. And I guess then there would be things like working on behalf of other sellers to manage their accounts. So agency model. And it may well be that you need to quit being a retail arbitrager in order to focus on private labeling, or you need to gradually refocus your energy and money from one to the other. Another transition that I've seen is that people gradually quit being wholesale sources to developing their own unique custom products. Sometimes there can be a really painful quitting that I've seen in a couple of businesses in the masterminds, one of whom is probably halfway through this, and the eight-figure seller that I can think of is probably all the way through this now. And that is transitioning from selling as a manufacturer and brand owner rather than just a retailer, selling your goods at wholesale prices to end retailers, and also selling direct to the consumer via Amazon or indeed your own shop. That is a very difficult situation because I have not yet seen anyone who can really truly make that work. There are awkward compromises required. But of course, if you've been doing that for years and years, sometimes decades in the case of very established businesses, then it's a very painful thing to quit selling to other retailers and high street retailers in order to sell direct to consumer. Of course, it's less painful than it was a few months ago. If you're listening to this in any time under sort of lockdown, this is late 2020. It's the 5th of November that I'm recording this because, of course, a lot of the high street is shut. And the 5th of November is a particularly meaningful day for England. I use the word advisedly, not just the UK, because England has been shut down again today for allegedly a month. And if you're listening to this in March, I think you'll find it may have been 4 months. So it's less tempting than it was to sell to big box retailers instead of selling direct to consumer. But it's still difficult to give things up that have made you revenue in the past. And that is one of the strategic bits of quitting that I know a couple of businesses have done. Now, I'm not saying that anyone has to do this or should just mindlessly do this. You have to look in a very analytical, thoughtful way at the reality on the ground of your business. But it's certainly one of those areas where you may want to consider strategically quitting the business model. So there's some simple examples for new people to Amazon. I mean, it's a lot simpler. Some people are just really technophobes. They don't dislike computers. They don't, in some cases, even own one, which just blows my mind that somebody should consider running an online business without a laptop. I literally experienced recently that a client tried to start an online business without owning their own laptop. Now, it never occurred to me that anyone would do that and try and run a sophisticated multi-$100,000 business from an iPhone or a tablet. So therefore, I'd never put any questions or filters in my sales process to filter people like that out. But I ended up with a client who literally had to borrow their son's computer in order to run the business. Unsurprisingly, when they got to the point where they also couldn't remember their own passwords for anything, never mind Amazon Seller Central, it was clear that this was just a mismatch between a person and a way of doing business. She seemed a very nice person. She had some products already selling via physical means. E-commerce was probably just not her thing. So it sounds really obvious, but sometimes you really have to be aware of things that just are neon signs flashing at you saying, this is not your thing. By the way, if you have had an Amazon business or an attempt at one in the past, and you've got an old Amazon Seller Essential account knocking around that you're no longer using, I had a conversation with a colleague of mine the other day that I reached out to say something else. And he said, oh, by the way, we're buying old Seller Central accounts that were established before 2018. Do you know anyone who's got one? And I said, well, actually, yeah, I've got one from one of the several businesses that I've been through over the last few years. And I said, yeah, sure, I'd be interested in exploring to that. We had a very respectful and frank chat, and he's probably going to go ahead and buy that account. And it turns out he's actually on the lookout for other people who have Amazon accounts that they no longer need and that were established before 2018. So if that happens to be you, if you're listening, and that's a classic sunk cost, by the way, if you've got an Amazon Seller Central account you no longer use, you might want to just get in touch with me and he may be able to buy it off you. If that's the case, just email me, michael@amazingfba.com, and stick something in the title like Seller Central accounts for sale or something like that. So I'll just mention that as an upside of strategic quitting, and sometimes a nice sweetener, a nice bonus involved, as it happens to be in that situation, because it's actually nice to get money for quitting, right? Normally, the money you get for quitting, though, in real life is normally further ahead in the future, unless you sell your business. That's the other time, of course, when you get paid for quitting, in a sense. So let's talk about the difference between strategic quitting plus plain old quitting, otherwise known as giving up because it's hard. Seth Godin talks about this in The Dip, and my understanding of what he says, without putting words in his mouth, is something like you need to plan in advance when you're going to quit strategically. So I think one of the differences between quitting in the moment and quitting strategically is something like this. Either you have the potential to be the best in the world at something, or you will never be particularly good, or you or your product or your business. When I say you, I mean, you know, the thing you're selling. And what I take from that is that you should have some way of assessing roughly whether you're going to be capable of being the best in the world or not. And then if the feedback from the marketplace is telling you that you're never going to be the best in the world, you should quit. And I guess the other thing that Seth Godin says clearly is you should plan in advance that you will quit if you don't believe you can be the best in the world. Remember that the definition of best and world is relative to the very narrow world of particular types of consumers, clients, or prospects, whatever word you want to use, for people who may buy your thing. Now, interestingly, Seth Godin says the following in his blog. Asking the question, the one I get asked the most, how do I know if it's a dip or a dead end, is the wrong question. Just as asking, how do I know if it's remarkable, isn't the key to the purple cow. No, the key insight is to ask the question, not to know the answer in advance. Asking yourself, is this something that will respond to guts, effort, and investment, helps you decide whether or not this is where you can commit. And then if you do commit, you're not browsing, you're in it. So what does Seth mean by all this stuff? Well, I guess the phrase guts, effort, and investment is great. Is this something that will respond to guts, effort, and investment? Now, that is a great question because it implies guts, effort, and investment are going to be needed, which is really important. So what I'm not trying to get across is the idea that just luck or great strategy is enough to succeed. Clearly rubbish. Equally, if something won't respond to guts, effort, and investment, and I think a lot of us know in our heart of hearts when that's the case, that's the time to strategically quit. Not because you won't have to put guts, effort, and investment in to succeed in any kind of business, but because it's a bit of a tragedy to put guts, effort, and investment into something when you know in your heart of hearts that it will not really respond to effort like that. And there are lots of Amazon product situations where it really is that situation. So I really think that is the key that I'm trying to get across here. And I think one of the things that is not what I'm saying is it's really hard to create a new product, to get it out in the marketplace and make a success of it. Therefore, you should quit because it's hard. Because 3 months into trying to create a new business, you are struggling in the keyword research phase. No, that's not a reason to quit. Unless, of course, you discover that you really hate keyword research, in which case your entire future on Amazon is going to be buried in keywords. You may want to choose a different business model. Another reason to change business model and quit strategically is because you recognize that something just isn't going to work for you. And private labeling, for example, doesn't work for some people because they don't like the risk involved. It's high risk, high reward. Some people prefer the lower rewards but higher certainty of wholesale sourcing, for example. So the second type of quitting is quitting a product or product line. And this is really such an important ability to quit. I have seen so many clients and discussed so many times in the masterminds where really good business owners are not willing to let go of the sunk costs in a product line because it's still making sales and there is some kind of profit. Now, of course, profit is better than no profit, and killing things prematurely is not smart business strategy. That said, if you have several products that are really making the majority of your profits, and you have a lot of other goods that are tying up capital, effort, and above all, management time, whether it's your staff's time, you have a bigger organization, which has been the case in some cases of the businesses we've worked with in the 10K Collective, or whether it's a solopreneur tying up their own time and energy, the available time and energy is being allocated across the board to multiple products, only a few of which are really extraordinary and the rest are at best mediocre. The mediocre is the enemy of the good. And if you really want to cut through the noise in the marketplace today, never mind tomorrow when the marketplace is blown up in size, which is already happening under COVID, I just thoroughly believe that you really need to be willing to kill your darlings, as they say in the writing world. And this is a really difficult conversation to have with yourself, to have with your team, and to have indeed in the mastermind. It's kind of embarrassing to suggest to somebody that they give up on something they've spent a lot of time and energy on. And of course, this is not a casual decision. And as an outsider, one can only kind of hint at the possibility. And really, it's for anyone who's got the deep inside knowledge of the whole picture, the financials, the practical implications, the implications of relationships with vendors and suppliers and so forth, who can really make that call. But it's often really one of the most powerful things you can do, in my opinion, is to quit a product line that is mediocre. What we haven't talked about, of course, is quitting a business or a brand as a whole, which is not the same as quitting a business model. But actually, some of the people I know in the 10K Collective have more than one brand. The most extreme example is five brands. One person's got two brands and is considering, in fact, actively going through the process of selling one of them at the moment. And I think that's really smart, because giving up one brand means you put a ton of money and effort into one focused place. And talking to the great business brokers and mergers and acquisition experts, for example, Jason Somerville and Chris Shipfling of Global Wild Advisors, who I spoke to recently for the 10K Collective podcast, they were pretty clear that a very focused business focused around one type of category of products is going to be much more sellable and valuable than something split into different places. Now, if you can sell a business for, say, $500,000 today and grow the other business that's of a similar size in a more focused way to a bigger size, that's going to actually work a lot better than struggling along with two brands, one of which is bound to be less good than the other. And again, in this case, it's not a question of quitting as in shutting down the business or the product line, but quitting being the owner of the business. It's a strategic kind of quitting of the ultimate kind, really, which is strategically exiting the business. So your business continues to exist, but you are no longer involved with it. And that can be really a very smart move. And it's a funny way to put it as a strategic quitting. But if you talk about strategic exit, that sounds much more acceptable and sexy in business, doesn't it? So why don't we call strategic quitting exiting a product line? The difference perhaps being that you don't sell it to somebody else, you just stop doing it. Which is interesting, isn't it? So there are various ways of dealing with brands. Sometimes the smart thing to do is just to kill a brand off. If you have five brands, I'm kind of looking at those guys sometimes and going, are they all really performing equally? We haven't actually dug into this because it wasn't where the owners of those businesses wanted to go. And so I didn't dig into it. But I would be interested in discussion at some point about whether you can really run five e-commerce brands at the same time well. My conclusion would be likely the 80-20 rule is going to kick in. So one or two of those brands probably make the majority of the profits. And maybe you'd be better off reinvesting the money from selling the other businesses. It's a discussion to have. Again, I'm posing more questions than answers today, I guess. The fourth type of quitting is relationships. And of course, any kind of relationship, business, personal, romantic, you name it, any form of end of a significant relationship is a painful thing emotionally. A business partnership is the most classic relationship that may need to be quit. And in fact, at some point, it's going to come to an end, even if it comes to a very positive end, if you both sell a business that you own, or one of them dies. I guess it's the ultimate end point. Every business partnership will come to an end at some point. I've finished business partnerships myself. I hope I've done it amicably. I was probably not aligned anymore with where they wanted to go with the business. And at the beginning of the relationship, my business priorities were pointing in one direction. And then by the end of the relationship, my personal priorities had changed. For example, my allocation of capital changed a while ago when I got married and we wanted to buy ourselves a property that we would be able to live in. And that, I think, was a good use of capital, but it meant that I wanted to get the capital back out of the business and sold it to my business partner. And that's a fairly easy, amicable decision. There are obviously other things that can happen with business partners. For example, one of them wants to keep a day job and keep security of income. You want to go all in on the business. That's pretty common. Actually, I've seen that a number of times. Sometimes the business partner just wants different things. They want, you know, more money out of the business. You want to reinvest the money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not an easy decision to quit a business partnership. That doesn't necessarily mean the same as quitting the business associated with the partnership, though. One of you can buy the other out. The other types of relationships that may need to quit is very simply if you are an employer or engage workers, you may need to let one of them go if they're not that good at the job. And that's a painful and unpleasant process, and no wonder most of us put it off. But there's often, often a great win on the other side of that unpleasant experience. And being willing to quit on somebody, if you like, or get them to quit, is a pretty powerful thing if done the right way. Unpleasant needs to be dealt with legally and ethically, but that can be really powerful. Another thing you may do is you've got somebody who's very good at what they do, but what they're doing is really irrelevant to the success of your business. Classic things, for example, one of the members of the 10K Collective Mastermind mentioned about a year ago, he said, yeah, we've got a social media guy, but I don't know what he does all day. And now it may be the social media guy is giving a presence to your brand in social media in a very valuable way. He may be fantastic at that as well, in which case you could probably should keep both the position and the person. But it may be that the person is fantastic at doing what you've told them to do, but the thing you've told them to do, that is to say the role, may be meaningless to the success of your brand. And if it's taking time and money, it may be that you need to just get rid of the role. In other words, make somebody redundant and not replace them with somebody else, but just put the money and effort into something more productive. For example, you might just as simply put it into Amazon ads or something. It could be anything, right? But the point is, you may need to let the person go. You need to let go the role as well. A different type of quitting of a relationship, but just as difficult and just as powerful if done correctly. And in crazy COVID times, there are obviously a lot of pressures on people to let go people. And maybe for financial reasons, you'll have to do that. And that's not pleasant. That's the world acting on you. But again, it can be done reactively or it can be done with strategic thinking. So that is to say, you may panic about the lack of money and fire everybody, or you could say, well, we are going to need to have a strategy to survive in terms of cash flow. And maybe part of that is letting go some people. Maybe it's putting them on part-time work, especially if they are engaged rather than employed. That's probably not that hard, and so on and so forth. Difficult decisions, but on the other side of it, as guests is a common theme, some really big wins. So let's recap. I think really the main points that Seth Godin is trying to make, and I'm obviously interpreting what he has to say, but I think for us, the first thing is the sunk costs idea. Past expenses have nothing to do with future economic decisions, and past profits have nothing to do with future decisions. That's to quote Seth Godin. So really difficult decisions, I think, come when we are emotionally, or in other words, mentally attached to something, when we have no business being attached to it because it belongs in the past. And in fact, strictly speaking, I guess pretty much everything is in the past. So everything we should assess from fresh and look at it and say, has it got a bright future? Yes or no? And if the answer is no, I guess what Seth Godin is encouraging us to do, and I would say from experience, is the right call is to give it up. Whatever that is, relationship, business, brand, product line, even an entire marketplace. I mean, I imagine that eBay was a really sexy place to sell in 2005. I don't know. I wasn't selling on it. I know a lot of people got started on eBay when Amazon third-party marketplace didn't exist. Is eBay a great place to sell now relative to Amazon? Well, I really haven't sold in both, but my experience from those who have says that's probably not the case. So sometimes the entire marketplace needs to be moved on from, and that's not easy, but this getting around this idea from Vince Lombardi quote, quitters never win and winners never quit, versus the Seth Godin quote, winners quit all the time, they just quit the right stuff at the right time. Really interesting to juxtapose those two and really think this stuff through. This is not overnight success, instant, yeah, I've got that insight, now I can just go and do it. This is thought-provoking stuff. So that's the message I guess I'm trying to get across to you, is sunk costs, strategic quitting, and really thinking how that applies in your Amazon business. But I want to just finally finish this by coming back to where we started this conversation, which is talking about the amazing successes we're seeing, and some people, and particularly the people that I've seen who've actually strategically quit the 10K Collective group, because it's somebody who's doing, I don't know what, but over $20 million worth of revenue a year, could be even more. is somebody whose needs I can't personally serve with the groups that I run at the moment, because we don't have any groups that serve the need of multiple eight-figure sellers, although that is something I'm aiming to develop in 2021. But what's been interesting is the discussion and why that's worked. And I would just say that if they hadn't strategically quit an entire business model and had a lot of very difficult discussions several years ago, that they definitely wouldn't be close to where they are today. So although the overnight success and explosion of revenue and growth that we see in the great businesses and the good business people and the amazing entrepreneurs that I've had the privilege of working with, they're very impressive things and they are real. And the perseverance in the face of challenges has been very, very real part of why those guys have achieved their success, and they deserve every bit of it. But one of the reasons that we don't see, and they don't talk about so much, that we know from private conversations with those guys, is just as much something to praise them for, which they've earned their success from, is the difficult but necessary, painful process they've gone through of strategic quitting when it was the right thing to do. I hope this has been thought-provoking and gives you the courage to do the right things in your business if you need to, and that at the other end of it, you'll come back and thank me in 2 years' time. If somebody says, I started reading Seth Godin and his book was amazing and it changed my life, I've already served you. If somebody comes back and says, I stopped doing this crappy thing that our business that I knew was wrong, but I hadn't had the courage to change until I thought about it, then I'm a happy man because I've served you well. Thanks very much for listening. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-Commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by myself and Jason Miles, a multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you own a thriving online business and want to be the best leader you can, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many e-commerce topics, go to theecommerceleader.com.